On today's episode of Nothing Major, we are diving into the major mailbag and answering some listener questions. We are going to include the list of Masters 1000s. We are going to rank them from best to worst. We're also going to dive into how sponsorship works in tennis with tennis apparel companies and racket companies. And we have a wild question for Stevie Johnson. And finally, we'll be pitching our bold ideas to reshape tennis. And it's up to you guys, the fans, to decide who has the best vision to lead us into this sport and into the future. Let's get into it. Welcome back, everybody, to Nothing Major. This is episode 16. I'm Sam Querrey. I've got John Isner with me, Steve Johnson with me, Jack Sock. He could come on at any time. We don't know. He was playing a pickleball tournament late last night. He is going to pop on here at some point, so we'll wait for that. We got ATP finals. This is the week before. Do you guys think Alcaraz is a little annoyed that he's won two slams, you know, Olympic silver, like won multiple Masters series, and he's ranked three? Usually that gets you to number one. I would think in a lot of years, if you have those like five like nuggets at the top, you're going to be ranked one.
Can I ask a question? The answer is no. We all know how good Sasha is at these Masters 1000s. He's won seven of them now after winning Paris, which is insane how consistent he's been at those level tournaments. But Alcaraz won two slams. If he finishes three in the world, obviously he's just fine with that. Not annoyed at all. Sasha, on the other hand, look, he's had everything but a slam. We know how good he is. He's so good at these Masters 1000 events. And, you know, for me, he deserves to be number two right now.
Yeah, I don't think Carlos has any intention on winning any other tournament but slams. It feels like he's doing his schedule or, you know, he's missing, you know, Madrid or Rome or like Monte Carlo this year. I think he missed a bunch of those tournaments. But he's just only, I feel as if he's only focused on winning slams and like eclipsing double digits, you know, trying to get to obviously the 20s because I think that's what his ultimate goal is. I really don't know if he cares about any other events but the big ones. And it seems like he's doing his schedule to create like such a longevity in his career to play those slams and be ready for those slams all four times every year.
You're right. Now that I think about it, would you rather be ranked three and have two Grand Slams or ranked two and have a couple Masters series? It's a no-brainer. You'd be ranked three with the slam. So, you know what? Bad hypothetical for me.
Hello.
Hey, there he is.
There he is. He's here.
All right. Jack has joined the pod. We asked John earlier. Jack is in Dallas where John lives. Jack was playing the MLP Pickleball Championships yesterday. John was actually in the crowd. I don't know if he was cheering Jack on, heckling Jack.
Was not cheering me on.
Your team unfortunately lost. Yeah, I want to know, one, how was the event? And did you like having John in the crowd? Was he actually cheering for you or cheering against you?
Okay, I will say the event is actually really cool. Playing against the Dallas Flash, and we're in Dallas. So we obviously had nobody cheering for us other than our bench and sideline for whatever that's worth.
It's a hostile environment.
It was Davis Cup like. Cowbells were going off. Felt like we were in Belgrade playing against Serbia. And I saw the big man over here. He was basically laughing at me the entire time. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, I mean you were chirping at me the whole time. So it's like you kept chirping at me.
Every time I looked over, you started laughing at me, literally.
My good buddy, like, runs the Dallas team, like literally one of my best buddies in Dallas. So like I'm a little torn, right? Like so I'm in, and I'm he like got me in a seat in the little, you know, his little fan section.
Oh, the Dallas team got Jack didn't get you a seat.
I left him a grounds pass at will call, and he didn't take it.
Yeah, he left me a grounds pass at will call.
Are you wearing some Dallas Flash gear while you're heckling Jack?
He was.
I wasn't wearing any Flash gear. What are you talking about? I had a black hat on and like a red shirt or something. I wasn't wearing any of the colors. I was sitting there enjoying pickleball, and that's it. Just, I was there as a fan.
I think the level was high. It was fun. It was fun to watch. Yep. And the Flash won, so John was very happy.
John, yeah, he came on the pod this morning, a big smile on his face.
Yeah, I know. That's why I didn't even want to come on. I didn't want to come on at 8 a.m. because I knew he was going to be over here cheesing.
We're going to move on. We got fan questions this week. We got Stevie leading it. So let's get into some fan questions.
All right, everyone. We asked some questions here from our fans on our Instagram poll. And we are going to kick it off with Armin Besto, who is asking, rank all 1,000 Master Series events from worst to best. Big gap from one to two. It's Indian Wells. Then I, for myself, go Cincinnati, Paris, Canada, Monte Carlo, Rome, Shanghai, Miami, Madrid, from 1 to 9. I can give you guys some reasons if you have some issues with my list, but that's it.
You have Miami second to last?
Yes. I don't like the tournament director, James Blake. We've had some issues with some food items in the past in the dining room that he never took care of. We've had some issues there with some of the Uncrustables in the player dining. And I think I actually don't know if I ever won a match, maybe one in my career at Miami. So I was just bad there.
Can you just add a little context to the Uncrustable Gate?
This is maybe like 5 years ago in the player lounge, player dining at Miami.
What is an Uncrustable, just to explain to the audience?
Yeah. So people who don't know, Uncrustables, I think they're only things basically in America. It is a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. The crust has been removed and it's in a circular shape and there's peanut butter and jelly in it. They're very popular in the United States amongst, honestly, kids all the way to adults. As you can see, there's multiple sizes of Uncrustables. So I then sent James Blake an email, and I issued the email in the subject line, urgent, all caps with like 5 exclamation points, player dining issue. And I won't read the whole email, but I went on to say there's a massive issue at player dining that the Uncrustables, even though they're priced the same, the size of the Uncrustables are different. Therefore, there should be different pricing for each Uncrustable. And he, you know, panic, you know, right away, runs down to player dining. I think he was pissed that I titled the email urgent player dining issue. I think there was like a food fight going on in player dining, but that's also why Miami is number 8 on the list, right? They don't have food pricing to figure out at player dining.
We can all enjoy those except for Jack.
Yeah, peanut butter.
I mean, all right, shots fired. I'm taking strays out here.
Let's say hypothetically Uncrustables comes in, sponsors the pod, gives us...
What do I do?
Gives us 25 grand. I don't think Jack gets any of that.
No, come on. That's crazy talk.
You can't be a consumer.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, have you ever had Uncrustable frozen?
Yeah, it's not super frozen. It's got to be removed from the freezer like a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, about 5 minutes. I agree.
But yes, good. They are very good frozen.
This is what happens when you're bored waiting for a doubles. Bingo.
Oh, man. I love Miami. It's you know, it's not a place I don't want to live there, but I love playing there. What's not to like about Miami? I don't like, it's Miami. I don't get it.
The Venta Football Stadium. If you go practice, the court's like a mile away. Crannon Park.
I'm not on that page at all.
What I mean, like driving to Key Biscayne was like so therapeutic when it was at Crannon Park. Go over the, you know, it's beautiful for everybody.
Key Biscayne was better than Hard Rock, that's for sure.
You know, choose which ones you like better. But like, yeah, I did well there, but I enjoyed my time.
It's because you want it, dude. Just own it.
Bear Sea for me. These guys hate Paris and Bear Sea, but I love it. Like it's a result based thing.
Yeah, but it's not because I want it. I mean, I did win. Actually, I won 11 matches in a row at one point there. I made a final the next year.
Wow. And you won the doubles there too.
And I won the doubles. Yeah.
But we can all agree that Madrid is not our favorite.
Madrid's not our favorite. In Indian Wells is our favorite.
Strictly because I can't eat dinner at 10 p.m. I'm in bed.
Okay, why do we love Indian Wells so much for everyone? It's number one on our list.
The setting, the mountains, like the atmosphere is unbelievable. Every court there, they have every court's like its own mini stadium. Even the practice courts are individualized stadiums. It's hard not to like go to Indian Wells, to the venue, to the site, and not be in a good mood.
Yeah, Indian Wells is the one to, when people ask me, there, I don't know if you guys get asked a lot, like, oh, I'm like starting to get into tennis. Like, what tennis tournament should I go to? I always tell them, don't go to the US Open. I say, go to Indian Wells in March. Oftentimes it coincides with spring break. Hop a flight. They have a lot of flights going into Palm Springs. Go watch that tennis tournament. You will not be disappointed. It's the fan friendliest of all the 1000s. There's so much room. You're never crowded. Fans love it. It's why it makes for one of the best atmospheres, for the players.
Okay, next question here. This one's from Button S6. Button 6, did John get his machine back and did Sam pay for the shipping? Because we had a post a couple weeks ago about Sam, I believe Venmo, requesting John for the money for Sam to send it back. So did Sam ultimately make $75 in this 6-month long saga? Or what happened there, John?
No, he did not. He sent me a Venmo request, which is sociopathic, insane.
I was hoping maybe you would accidentally like misread it and then hit accept, and then I wasn't going to give it back.
Yeah, I know you weren't. I know you weren't. But he sent it back. Took about 7 days. You know, USPS ground. Because I actually texted Sam about it because a buddy of mine tore his ACL playing tennis. So like, I'm going to give it out to my buddy here in Dallas because he needs it. But it's being put to good use, and that's the important thing.
Are you going to drive it over to him and then ask him for some gas money?
I'm not going to. It's a good question. It's really good. I don't know what my comeback is for that. No, I might drive it over to him. I will not ask for gas money. But for me, I'm out $93 out of all this. That's the way I look at it.
But you're a good friend.
I'm a good friend. Yes, sir.
So the game ready debate is dead.
Yeah, but we put out the poll and we were going to abide by the results of the poll, and I lost the poll, and so Sam didn't pay me back. Fair enough. Water under the bridge, and I feel like our friendship is strong enough that we can overcome this.
All right, this next question is from Dylan O'Connor. Should catching a ball toss be a fault? And we'll go to our resident serve expert, John Isner, on that one.
The answer is 100% absolutely be a fault. I think as professional tennis players, like the best in the world at what we do, once that ball leaves your hand, it's in play. I don't care if you toss way out to the right, way out to the left, way out in front of you, way out behind you, you have to hit it. And you catch it, it's a fault. Maybe you get one mulligan a match. I would not even be in favor of that, but I think that's, you know, reaching some middle ground, which would be a good start. So for me, throw the ball up. You have to hit it. If you don't, it's a fault. That's where I stand.
Completely agree with you. 100%. Ball is up. You cannot catch it. You got to make a play on it. Like, I don't have much more to add to that, but there should not be ball tosses thrown up and not. If you catch it, that's a fault.
Also, couldn't agree more with it. I don't, it was conditions, whatever. If it's other sports, they play in wind. They play in crazy conditions. Once the ball goes up, it's in play, and you go from there.
Stevie?
Next question.
When you were playing and the shot clock's at 5, the serve clock's at 5-4, and you're not quite ready.
It was a good play, though, to throw it up, though, if you want extra time.
Was that what you were doing? When you would catch your ball tosses, was it because, all right, I'm not quite ready to serve, I'm going to throw it up and I'm going to reset the whole thing?
Well, when the shot clock came in, I would say no, because I was like, I played fast, so like I was never in danger of a time violation. But before, for sure, like, it, I mean, I probably did it a couple times a match, but it would always be like if I was real tired, if I needed a couple extra seconds. But it was pretty rare, I felt like. But I also, like, I honestly would like tell you, anybody, this, like, I had the most shocking ball tosses sometimes. Like, I don't get it. Like, I would throw it and it would be so bad. Like, it was just shocking to me because this is the only thing that you could control in tennis. The only thing. And I found a way occasionally to make it so incredibly bad. So I probably did probably somewhere between 3 and 5 a match, but I'd say 1 or 2 of those was on purpose.
I took pride in never catching a ball toss. What I would do.
A little different for you. I mean.
Well, I mean, why?
I feel like your toss can't, like, I feel like you hit a serve from any spot at any time. I feel like it's a, that's,
yeah,
a,
but you know, I can throw, you know,
but it's very, I feel like that's different than somebody.
Because I can, if I throw it out to the right, then my angle's
you
different.
You can still make it work. Like us at 6 foot, like we got to, yeah, it's a little different.
Gveltman is asking, how do clothing and racket sponsorship work? Can we give us some details? And I will throw it over to Samuel Query on that one.
Yeah, so I feel like clothing sponsorships and racket sponsorships are pretty much the same. You know, all players, a lot of times you'll get a base salary. So you might sign a 3-year deal with, let's call it Nike, and they're going to give you X per year. And that's based on whether you're ranked 5, 10, 20, 100, something along those lines. And then usually during the year, you have bonuses that will trigger. Hey, if you are with Nike, if you win a major, you get a $1 million bonus. If you make a final, you get $500,000. If you make a semifinal, you get $100,000. And then you might get a smaller final. If you win a 250, maybe here's a $7,500 bonus or a $10,000 bonus. And generally speaking, I think that's how the contracts worked for clothes and rackets during the course of the year for the players.
Yeah, but Sam, also a lot of these contracts would have reductions.
Yes, good point.
Right. And so, and oftentimes those reductions, obviously, if a company is in a sense betting on you, they would, if they're going to, Nike, if they're going to pay you a handsome salary each year, they want to ensure, you know, so they get their value. They want you to stay inside the top 20 or whatever that, at a certain point, if you fall at the end of the year rankings, if you fall out of whatever that number is top 20, top 30, your base salary is going to get reduced. So it's tough. Obviously, it incentivizes the players to keep their ranking as high as they possibly can. If not, their contract's going to get chopped down for the following year.
Did you guys ever have a close year-end ranking bonus reduction or triggering that you kind of hit in Paris or at the end of the year where you clipped made top 20 or top 10 or kind of vice versa, in or out one way or the other?
I had a big one when I was with Nike. When I finished the year in Paris and did well the year end, and then but my contract with Nike started in March, right before Indian Wells, so it was kind of going into the next year. And it was I remember Lucas Pouille versus Bautista Agut in the finals of Dubai in February, end of February, right before my contract. And I needed Bautista to win to keep Pouille at 11 instead of top 10 to keep me in the top 10. And it triggered a Nike top 10 bonus. And I'm forever indebted to Roberto. love the guy. Told him I'd buy him a horse. It was a running joke for a while. But that was nice. I'm glad he won that match.
Wonder who Nike was rooting for.
Probably Lucas.
Yeah, good. That's a good question. It's like the football player that gets 1,000 yards or whatever it is, you know?
Honestly, Nike probably doesn't care, but if it's like a smaller company where there's like a giant trigger, they'd
be freaked out.
Remember hearing that back in the day when Novak was with Sergio Tacchini? Novak was with them for 4 or 5 years, and the rumor was that he was essentially just putting them out of business because he kept winning every major.
He made them bankrupt, didn't he?
Yeah, and every Masters Series, and he's just triggering bonus after bonus after bonus, and they're not Nike, and they were just not losing money, but they just owed Novak so much that they couldn't continue, and I don't know if they dropped him or they went under or what happened, but it ended.
It was his legendary 2012 year. Remember, he started 42-0. I mean, it was absurd. He was undefeated through Rome.
Yeah, he didn't lose a match until.
Yeah, and so that way he was wearing Tacchini. they're looking. They're like, holy shit, lose. You know, you won't lose.
Yeah, exactly. Make the final and lose, please. We've got 5,000 euro left in the Sergio Tacchini bank account. We can't give you anymore.
Rumor has it, yes, that's what was happening. But I think they wanted him to take an L.
Yeah, and I guess we didn't touch on product too. Product with clothes and rackets, you essentially got as much as you want. Most clothing companies, I would say 4 or 5 times a year, would send you the new line of what's to come. You'd have a certain line in Australian Open, then maybe a new line during the spring. You get a clay court line, and then maybe your whites for Wimbledon, and then summertime you get stuff. And rackets were kind of the same. I feel like most contracts, they'd say, oh, you get 15 rackets a year, but essentially you can get as many rackets as you want. I think for most companies, I don't think players abused it. They weren't getting 300 rackets. You just, however many rackets you needed, they would pretty much just send them to you.
The clothing kind of meant more at times financially than the racket.
Depending on who you're with, 2, 3, 4, 5x more than racket sponsors.
That's actually a good segue if I can ask a question to you three, because this does not apply to me. Y'all at some point in your careers changed racket companies. What was the thinking behind that? Was it all money-based, or you were like, screw my old racket, I can't play with it anymore? Or was it mostly, all right, this company's offering more, I'm going to make this work, I'm going to try to make it work? For me, I was a creature of habit. I didn't want to change anything, so I always stuck with what I stuck with. But I know, Sam, you went from Prince to Babolat. Jack, you went from Babolat to Yonex, correct?
Yeah.
Stevie, you went from Babolat to Yonex as well.
Sort of, yeah. Well, yeah. I was kind of like you, John. Like, I would never have switched if those rackets were readily available. Just like you, I was a creature of habit, and you know, once you get something in your hands for any player, if you like the racket, there's no reason to switch. Because I had, I'm sure you guys did as well, like plenty of opportunities to switch companies for a lot more money. But, you know, we make our money with our racket. So for me, I would never have switched if I had enough sticks.
Can I bring up a pet peeve on the rackets? A lot of pros. You know, a lot of times racket companies that have a racket and then they would bring out a new version of that racket and the paint job would be slightly different and it would feel the same. But like so many players are like, I can't play with this racket. It feels different. I thought that was such BS. Like it felt the same. So many, there's no way these players can feel it. Like the paint job's a little different that it would feel off. Maybe you guys were like that, but
couldn't disagree more with you, Samuel.
You're a professional tennis player. I should be able to give you any racket and you should be able to figure it out. There's no way a little different paint color should.
The glossy and the matte, they play so much different, dude.
No way. No way, guys. Yes, they
do. It was a different racket, the matte to the gloss.
This is not surprising. Out of the four of us, I see the two guys with absolutely no hands and no feel.
Get out of here.
Feel this way. And then
John had incredible feel.
You have no feel, dude. You are so bad.
I know. I don't. John, though, around the net.
Sam, you had sneaky good feel. Sam.
Yeah, thanks, John.
Yeah. I had the best drop shot of this whole group.
That's a joke. Are you serious?
No, that's valid. You absolutely did, John.
You have the best drop shot in this group?
Yes.
What is wrong with you?
I have the best forehand drop shot, and best drop shot volley of this whole group.
Yep. Totally agree.
Thank you, Sam.
I think I'm going to quit this podcast if you actually think that's real.
We've lost the plot. We've lost the plot in this. What are we talking about? You have the best drop shot in this group.
John, like, utilizes it a lot. I don't think I ever saw Stevie hit a drop shot on his forehand.
I mean, we're just sitting here. Sam and I are just sitting here, and Stevie's just like, you guys got hands, stone hands, you know? Like, right out of nowhere. Like,
but you don't have the best drop shot in the group. You don't.
He does. He does.
If you guys are just out of your
mind.
What
is wrong with you?
Okay, let's move on.
I'm with Sam. The players would freak out. Like, my paint job changed a lot over time. Like, all right, it feels the same.
Yeah, because you just hit a serve and then walk left and right.
Yeah, all you do is hit a serve.
Yeah, because I would hit serves. Yes, it was my biggest weapon. It doesn't mean I can't hit a drop shot. But obviously, the serve was my biggest weapon.
I mean, to be fair, you have better hands than Sam.
Sam's got sneaky, decent hands. It's just technique was like on the backhand volley. But like you and Sam. No, I'm serious.
You're absolutely right. Everything you're saying is right.
Yeah, like I always like people always made fun of Sam's volleys and stuff.
I'm not. That's Stevie. That's not me. That's Stevie. I think Sam has good hands. I don't think you have the best drop shot in the group.
All right, we can debate that another time.
We will debate that another. Somebody ask that question in for the next fan mailbag day. We'll debate it.
We're talking about feel and hands out here.
We need a highlight reel of my best drop shots, guys.
Let's put them head to head right now. What are we talking about?
This is from Mako, whatever. What's more impressive, Rafa's 81-match clay winning streak or my own 72-match winning streak in college? And I'm going to let the three of you debate, and I'm just going to sit here. Please be friendly.
That's a tough one. Wow.
We'll go to the college guy first.
Hands down, Stevie's 72-win match streak. That's
all those
down.
Wins over, like, Sacramento State and the Anteaters of UC Irvine. That's a tough one. Stevie, we do know numbers-wise, you're the greatest college tennis player of all time, so I'm certainly not going to malign what you did in college. But this is kind of a funny debate, right? And so you were the greatest college tennis player of all time, but we're talking about the greatest tennis player of all time, especially on one surface. So I'm gonna give the slight edge to Rafa. Both very impressive. I think the 81 matches on clay, just a tick more impressive than the 72 in a row in college.
I disagree completely. I think the 81 on clay will be beaten at some point. The 72 in college will not be beaten at any point. So I'm going with our fellow Nothing Major co-host here, and the 72 win in college is way more impressive.
Yeah, I agree with Jack. I think 72 in college. Rafa's got the crowd behind him everywhere. Stevie's going to away venues, beating, you know, away at UCLA, away at Georgia, away at Washington, away at Oregon State. These are tough places to play.
Couldn't agree more.
And it won't be broken.
John's just a hater because he just never clipped that NCAA title, so we could never get a winning streak going. So
I couldn't.
Some people went to Georgia, some people went to USC, and then...
That's okay. I'm a little surprised by those answers. I both impressive, but Rafa's is.
We can open it up to a poll.
I feel like you guys at the bottom are just farming for engagement, and fair enough. maybe we get a lot of clicks out of this.
No, Jack made a good point.
I think one will be broken, one won't be.
Yes, I think it's more likely that Rafa's streak is be broken.
You think someone's going to win 82 matches in a row?
I think at some point Alcaraz will win 82 matches in a row. Nobody's going to win 73 in a row.
It's got to be on clay, though.
82 in a row on clay.
Someone's going to win 82. No one's going to win 73.
Can I bring up a point, too? Stevie, you had 72 matches in a row that you won, right?
Correct.
Rafa won 81 in a row on clay. Rafa sprinkled losses in during that streak on hard court and on grass.
But all his wins were on hard court.
That wasn't 80. That's not 81 in a row for Rafa. It's just 81 on one surface.
He was pretty average outside of the clay.
Yeah, but all Stevie's wins were on hard.
Yeah, but it was 72 in a row.
Yeah, but he was also playing at hostile environments and away teams. Oh my God. What are we talking about?
How many matches did Rafa win in a row at any given point on all the surfaces?
Imagine playing at Arizona if you're Rafa. You're not going to win that match.
All right, Jack. Now I know you're just clowning around right now.
I'm struggling to agree with Jack now. Stevie, 72 in a row. Did you know at some point when you were like, did you know you had like 15 in a row, 16 in a row? Were you thinking about it?
I mean, I don't want to put myself in like Roger, Rafa, these guys' shoes, but like I want to say they felt the same at obviously like the highest possible level. Like when I was walking out to matches, I already felt like I had won. You know what I mean? Like you just knew like something catastrophic would have to happen today for me to lose this match, whether it's like, you know, I literally get hurt or something crazy must happen. Like my confidence level is high. You know, the opponent's like mental, maybe strength of actually beating me was low. So like there was all these factors that go in. And I want to say that's what like Rafa felt every day at the French Open, which would be unreal to feel that at the highest level. But yeah, I had a very fruitful 4 years at USC and really enjoyed my time there. All right. Another question from DCAS89. What is the craziest court you have ever played on? Is it fast, slippery, location, court surface, you name it? Let's throw it over to John.
Okay, I got an answer for that. It's all three of those. Fast, slippery, which I kind of, you know, put in the same category, and the location. I played a challenger. This must have been 2008 or 9. Sam, I don't know if you ever played. Did you ever play in Rimouski, Canada?
No. It sounds like a fictional city you just
Yeah, it's made. Rimouski, Canada, so like, so you got Montreal, right? Then you have northeast of Montreal, you have Quebec City. And then you have northeast of Quebec City. I think I'm getting my geography right. You have Rimouski.
The Rimouskers.
I feel like you're in Greenland at this point.
Yeah, you're almost in Greenland. That's a good point. And the fastest tennis courts of all time in Rimouski, Canada. I lost in the semifinals. Guess what the score was? 6-6. And yeah, I can't even remember who I lost to, but Rimouski, Canada. But fun fact about that, Sidney Crosby either played junior hockey or like low minor league hockey in Rimouski, Canada, because his jersey was like all over town. And they didn't have much to do there. It was like a subway. The hotel was okay. There was like two restaurants. And to get to the Quebec City airport, I remember was like a 3-hour drive through like the barren wasteland of like northeast Canada. So for me, Rimouski, Canada definitely doesn't exist anymore. If we can get some backstory on that, the history of that event would be good. But
I think it does still exist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. At least it did until recently. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it's still on the calendar. Sammy? What do you got for us?
I've been trying to think. I can't think of like a crazy court in the pros, honestly. I feel like they're all pretty good. I feel like going to junior tennis, I played in some ratchet like parks and stuff where there's cracks all over the courts and metal nets. But
I remember
that. I honestly don't have a good, I don't have a good answer. I don't have like a crazy like on-court tournament one.
Not a challenger? Like a
No, not really. Like I feel like they're all like pretty nice.
I mean, if I have to pick one, I think location and vibe wise, I'd probably go with the Uzbekistan Davis Cup, where I feel like we're just at a court in the middle of Uzbekistan, and there was we had the U.S. Davis Cup like team on this bench, and then they brought in like 100 like school students to sit in the stands, and then one like military guy. And it was just the weirdest vibe. Just nothing about it felt good. Nothing about it was right. And we played a Davis Cup match. It was weird. The whole thing was weird. So I'm going to go with Tosh Kent on that one.
Yeah. I think John already took care of maybe the crazy side of things. I'm going to go with maybe the nice side of things, which was shocking. I played Monte Carlo once. I played another member of this podcast there. And I think we were both a bit surprised that we were the feature match on center court. Two Americans, at like third or fourth on like Monday night, on center court at Monte Carlo. And it's like the most picturesque court, right? Like you got the ocean behind you. You got all the yachts back there. Like it didn't make any sense why John and I weren't at like a public park playing our first round match.
Y'all flew to Monte and played each other?
We played each other. And then I lost pretty handily. John was unreal on that court.
Guess I was hitting good drop shots.
Yeah, no. But speaking of that, John being always so sour after losing, you know, when I lost, you know, I still wanted to play doubles with John the next day. And he said, no, I'm pulling out. You're going home. So he pulled out. And then, I went home. I was going to play doubles the next day. And John said, no, we're out. Because if I lose, I'm leaving. I go, well, you don't have to. Like, if I lose, I'll stay. He goes, no, you're going home. So he's basically, like, just big brothered me and sent me home. It's kind of lame, but it was a great court to play on. Owen won their lifetime, and that'll never change.
Okay, I want to add a little backstory to this. So Stevie and I played in Houston the week before, as all of us did. And we were the only two Americans that were going from Houston to Monte Carlo. And I believe we both lost in the quarterfinals in Houston that year. So we didn't get on the same exact flight, but we got into Monte Carlo around the same time on Saturday?
No, Sunday. Sunday morning-ish.
No. No,
we lost Saturday. In the quarters on Friday.
Yeah, and we flew on Saturday.
And we got there when? Do you know how time travel works?
You got to plus 8 hours or 6 hours.
Do you not remember this? God, you're old and have no memory.
No. Okay, so we landed on Sunday?
We landed on Sunday. You and I hit Sunday night. And then we played Monday. And I left Tuesday. I was there for like 36 hours.
Okay, we played on Monday. And I'm thinking, all right, Stevie, let's just play on Monday, right? Because one of us is going to lose. One of us is going to go home. He was lobbying to play on Tuesday. He wanted that extra day.
Literally just got in there on Sunday.
That's fine. We're dealing with the same, you know, the same situation.
Yeah, one's different than the other, but based on play style. Like you get to go serve. You get to go do what you do. It's very different.
Disagree.
It's very different. No, no.
If you're over 6'4", you can't have this conversation.
That's very different.
You're both dealing with jet lag, both dealing with this, that. Stevie was like insistent on playing on Tuesday, but I won that battle. We played on Monday, and Stevie, I guess I pulled out of doubles. I don't remember that. I pulled out of doubles a lot.
So. Yeah. I was like, I'll stay.
I owe you guys a lot of money, Sam especially. I probably owe you $75,000.
Probably. Doubles pullouts.
Sam, you disagree that John's in a more favorable position at that point, getting there on a Sunday to play Monday than Stevie.
He's there in the exact same boat. They both have the exact same amount of time.
No, you cannot say that.
What you guys, two victims over there?
He's playing a completely different. He gets to just serve and hit balls. This guy has to.
He's more than that. I feel like a lot of people rip John just being a server. He had great groundies. He was an underrated guy to practice with. Like keep good rallies, good.
I don't disagree with that. I'm saying in that position.
No, I don't agree with you. I am on John's side again.
Thank you. We're both dealing with the same thing.
Right, John has the edge, 51-49.
If you were to fly to a tournament the day before you're about to play it, would you rather be John or would you rather be Stevie?
I wouldn't care.
You can't ask Sam.
That's okay.
I'd rather be Federer, and I would have gotten there. I would have flown private. I'd be at a nice hotel. Oh yeah.
A touche.
Golly. All right, we're done. Thank you for the fan questions.
No, hold on. We're not wrapping this yet, Stevie. I got one more. M Fane. He wants to know if Stevie lives off his earnings. He wants to know if Stevie lives off his earnings or does he have a job? Tell people that your day-to-day job.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Do I get to answer that myself? I hang out with you three clowns once a week, twice a week, filming this podcast. Do some Tennis Channel stuff, do some coaching, just odds and ends. I like to stay around the house, try and take the girls to the park, take them to school. I like doing that kind of stuff, drop off. It's been in the back of my mind since episode, I don't know, 3, when Marty Fish said Sam Querrey was a better golfer than me. So I've been working really hard on my golf game, because that was, maybe the biggest lie ever told on this podcast. But other than that, I just try and, think of new things to cook. I love to cook at the house and, just trying to occupy my time that way. So that's it.
It sounds like you're applying for jobs and you've just been denied.
Sounds like you don't need to work, is what that sounds like.
This is actually a random question. Any of you guys ever had have to do a resume and keep it, or just in school, how they have those talk about your resume and filling things out and doing things the proper way? Did you guys ever have to do one, or do you still have one that you can go back to and just kind of look back and laugh a little bit, or no? I mean, John and I might, because we did school.
Yeah, we did school, albeit not very well, but we did do school. And I remember making a mock resume or whatever, as if I was, in college applying for a job. I would need to brush up on my resume knowledge if needed to.
Are you proficient in Excel? That's a big one,
No. I wish I was. I mean, I really wish I was. There's a lot of things I wish I was more proficient in that I lost touch with while playing tennis.
It would be a fun bet if we all went after the same job, just to see who can get it, but not a tennis job. Who can get a job at Wells Fargo quickest, starting now?
I think I could get that.
You gotta go put a resume. You gotta find a Wells Fargo, find an opening, interview, and see. You gotta make one and
you gotta make one. Absolutely.
Will your way in there. You gotta be impressive in the interview process or something.
All right. Good question, Sam. Thank you. I live off the land.
We should try that, to be honest.
I got some plants out front, some limes, some lemons, just working on my sustainability here.
When this podcast comes out, the election in America will be over. No one wants to hear our election predictions or who we're voting for, but I think they do want to hear if we were going to be running for tennis commissioner, what our platform would be. So the premise of this is we each get about 1 minute to kind of give our rundown of what would make us the best commissioner of tennis. The other three can then react. We're going to start with Stevie. You have 1 minute now. Why would you be the best commissioner of tennis?
All right. I have a few bullet points here I'd like to go through. First and foremost, one, tennis needs to be more fun and fan friendly. We need music. We need more movement. It's too stale, top to bottom. And I'm excluding Wimbledon in this category. It's kind of its separate entity. I like the tradition there, but everywhere else needs to be more fun. Play some music. Let's have the fans move around and enjoy the tennis. Two, we need to have regional tours like Asia, Australia, North and South America, and Europe. You pick a tour to play for the whole season and you play on that tour and you qualify for slams that way. So everybody gets to say, so the four of us, I would assume, would all kind of stay in North America, North and South America. And they'll be if we're going to equate this to golf a little bit, the Corn Ferry style. So there's, the top 30 guys, and then there's the next tour of top 30 guys that are, fighting for relegation and, addition to the main tour. We got to change the scoring next. I like the fast four scoring, get into the meat and the bones of the match quicker. And then the season ends after the US Open. World Tour Finals the week after. No tour after the U.S. Open, big off season. But then I think we should have a bit of a silly season, fun events that guys can do for the month of October if they want. If not, call it a year.
All in all, that's not what the fans want.
Oh, goodness gracious. I'm kind of with Stevie on this one.
You like that?
I don't know. Give me my minute.
Let's go to Jack's minute right now.
All right, let me give you my minute. I'm gonna condense the season. However many events we got, 30 whatever events they have a year. We're gonna go to 16 just unbelievable events. The best locations, the best venues, the best everything. Prize money goes way up. Everybody's playing for way more. Sorry for the guys that are not in those events. Just SOL. But I think you just make it, you make it a, just, it's basically a Premier League and everybody is playing for top dollar at the best venues. And, like Stevie said, in the fall you have like a fun, like little, maybe you do like a little team thing, or you do like a little fun, funny, what do you call it? Fun season or whatever in the fall. And yeah. And you, but I think you condense it. You don't play so many tournaments. People are getting haggard. People are pulling out at events. People are injured, whatever. You have 16 premier events, and then you go from there.
I didn't mind that. Like Jack's running on like three just bullet points. They're strong. That's not bad at all.
It's how I feel about Wiffle. They got to have 12 premier events in Wiffle, but tennis, they got 16.
Tour over Stevie's tour.
You take my tour.
I don't mind the calendar, quite honest with you. I don't mind it. I think it's you
gotta play 32 events a year.
No, you never played 32 events a year in my life, but you rest when you need to rest. You try to peak around, of course, the Grand Slams and the Masters 1000 events. The calendar is the calendar. You got to hit all these. We're a global sport. You have to hit all these places. So the calendar stays the same. What I would like to institute, especially on a trial basis early on in tournaments at the 1000 events, let's call it Indian Wells, Miami, Madrid, it could work at all the 1000 events. I'd like to have a mixed doubles event at which Indian Wells is trying, but you start this with like four teams. So the top players that lose early in these tournaments, Jack, stay with me. Carlos Alcaraz loses early in Indian Wells. That's bad for the tournament, right? That's bad for the sport. Well, let's incentivize him.
He's not
going to
play mixed
around.
Doubles at that point.
Let him go. I'm about to hit Jack on the mute button as a moderator.
Yeah, thank you. I didn't interrupt you, Jack. Thank you. And you incentivize these guys. It would sell tickets out in a second. And you have mixed doubles at the 1000 events with the best players that if some of them lose early, you have Alcaraz in golf play against Medvedev and Sabalenka or whatever. That's going to sell out. I'm sorry. It's a great idea. And I think in the doubles grand slams, you cut the field and you also incentivize players that lose early in the grand slams to compete in doubles for a ridiculous purse. So you win the US Open doubles, it's $1 million each. So if you lose before the round of 16.
So just lose in singles and then make more in doubles and mixed is what you're saying.
No, that was a good. You're not going to try to lose in singles, but if you do, John's saying, yeah, pop into this doubles tournament, winner gets $1 million.
You start the doubles tournaments.
You thought mine was boring?
And no, anyways, all right, guys, I didn't interrupt y'all.
I didn't interrupt you at all. Yeah.
You interrupted me like three times, and anyways, but that's it. I think you can make doubles draws. You could start them in the quarterfinals or the round of 16. Second week of events for players, the marquee players that lose early, you just flat out put them in the doubles draw and they're playing for a lot of money. It's going to sell out every single time. So you make the money that way on tickets. It's an easy sell.
I like it. I'm a fan.
Thank you. We're agreeing a lot.
Yeah. You guys are in cahoots today.
I think Stevie and I are on the same boat on a lot. Like,
hey, wake me up when John's done.
Yeah. Alcaraz is going to lose second round of the U.S. Open. Do you think he's going to stick around in New York and play mixed doubles for $1 million purse? Absolutely not. It's not going to happen.
So then he should just not play singles then at that point.
He's going to lose second round to Bocic von der Zonschloops, and then he's going to stick around and play mixed doubles for 10 days? Like, no, he's not going to. No, what are we talking about?
All right, Sam, what do you got for us? I feel like you've been itching to get at this.
We were going to do this segment last week. We've pushed it off. I had an extra week to think about it. If I'm commissioner of tennis, it's going to be run as a dictatorship by me. I have Roger Federer as my vice president. He'll kind of answer to me. He'll help me with decisions. Every tennis decision is going through me. We're going short sets, like Stevie said. No ad scoring. First to four, 3 out of 5 sets. Zero warm-up. We're eliminating warm-up. You go on the court. You're ready to play. And I'm going every match – on court coaching, everyone's mic'd up. You hear exactly what everyone's saying. And then every grand slam is winner take all $25 million. And I want that money rolled out like poker. If we have Alcaraz versus Sinner, winner take all $25 million, all the slams, or zero prize money for the rest. Maybe a little bit for the first round.
So then don't show up so the four of us should have just never played.
You would have still played for the chance to win.
I mean,
think of how good that would be.
Probably stay at home.
I like the idea of wheeling the money out.
I like that idea. I'd be actively telling the chefs to undercook the chicken if I wanted to win $25 million. Okay.
How cool would that be, though? At the slams, that's on the line. I think people would be into it. I think fans would be into it.
It's kind of like what they did in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I like that. I like the point of I think they should wheel out the money. I think that would be unreal for a U.S. Open final or whatever. That would be unreal.
So anyway, we'll do a vote. We'll put it to a vote, and we can see what the fans, whose tour they want to play the most. Stevie's boring tour. Jack's tour is pretty good. John's is pretty good. And then I think mine's the best, but we will see.
Yeah, everyone loves to be in a dictatorship.
I'm going to make decisions that people are going to love. All right, there it is.
Good Commissioner there, Samuel. And that's it.
Holy cow.
That's it for episode 16. I appreciate all of you who have been supporting the Nothing Major podcast by leaving us ratings and leaving reviews. If you haven't, please subscribe to Nothing Major on your favorite podcast platforms and leave a rating and a review. Follow us on social using the @NothingMajorPod handle. That's on Instagram, TikTok, X, and we're finally going to be live on YouTube, and hope you guys enjoy that on YouTube. So with that, to close, Jack, it's your turn for the random player of the week. We've been keeping this going for about 4 or 5 weeks running. So Jack, go ahead.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. For my random player of the week, I think I have one that we all know. He was a weird top 100 player there for a little bit. I'm gonna go with one, Alijaz Bedene. Just a weird. He was a 75 in the world for no reason for a lot of years, and. He was in the main draw of slams, and we don't know why. So
Alijaz Bedene, Slovakian, then he played for England for a second, and then
he went like England at the end, right? He had a weird little switch there at the end. Yep, Alijaz Bedene, in main draw of slams, we don't know why.
Good one, yeah, good one.
Why was he making $80,000 every slam for no reason?